call. We were talking about hazardous waste. So basically with fluoride, if they didn't dump it in our water, they'd have to do something else with it.
Yeah, they could recycle it. I mean, they could convert it back to calcium fluoride and use that as a chemical feedstock. They've suggested that they might be able to use it in making cement. That's one other possibility. But all of this wouldn't make them as much money as they get for this very easy giveaway product to the public water supply.
You know, my friend Jerry Purnell, the science writer and science fiction writer, just mentioned me in this email that this is compulsory medication. They are forcing us to take medication. And he also went on to write, what happens if they want us to take other things and put it in our drinking water? When does it stop, Paul?
The government and the courts are very clear on that. It was Doe versus Rumsfeld, you know, with the anthrax scare, where the court ruled even under emergency conditions of war, the government cannot force an individual to be medicated with a substance which has not been specifically approved for the purpose and manner it is intended. And, of course, fluoride has not been approved by the FDA to treat or mitigate dental disease, dental decay, and it's not been approved being put into water. So it can't even be a drug because it hasn't been approved. It's illegal to sell an unapproved drug.
Now, Bill, in your particular case, not only are you a dentist, by the way, I went to pre-dent school for 2 years at the University of Detroit.
There you go.
Good school, by the way. Good school. You have a master's degree in public health. So what do some of your friends in that field say about fluoridation?
Well, most of my public health friends are in favor of fluoridation. When I get to talk to them, then they start backing off and going, well, you know, we haven't looked at the research. And, you know, the big thing is if they start speaking up against fluoridation, they lose their jobs. Now, for one reason or another, the people who have promoted fluoridation, when I get to talk to them and we sit down at the table and we sit down at a dinner and I go through some of the science on it, they aren't in their jobs very long. For one reason or another, they just don't stay there because their public health is like the marketing side of medicine. And they don't look at the science as much. That's not their purpose. Their purpose is to promote the agenda of the scientific community, the health department, or whatever it is. So they're given an agenda, get everybody fluoridated. That's a wonderful thing, so fluoridate everybody. They don't look at the science. They just start promoting like a wild salesman an idea without looking at the science.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is the problem, that most dentists and doctors don't have time to read the primary literature. I can. I'd be a professor of chemistry. I've been retired for 2 years. I can read everything. Hats off to Bill. He found the time to do it. But most people can't. And so what they're doing is they're relying on other agencies, big agencies, like the Center for Disease Control. Now, every day, somewhere in the world, somebody is quoting the Center of Disease Control as saying that fluoridation is one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century. What people don't realize when they make that quote is that the Center of Disease Control only has one division involved with fluoridation, and that's the oral health division. And the oral health division is staffed with people with dental qualifications, not medical qualifications, not toxicologists, not risk analyzers. And their job is to promote fluoridation. They'll even send people out to support mandatory fluoridation in states on a statewide basis. They did that in New Jersey, in Arkansas, in Oregon a few years ago. And so they've got a conflict of interest. This division, which you would think at being the Center of Disease Control would be able to make the ultimate judgment on whether this chemical was safe or the health effects and so on. No, they are promoting fluoridation. They cannot make an objective, independent assessment of the safety of the program that they spend all their time pushing. There's nobody at the CDC who's overseeing this program outside the oral health division. That's a shocker. And it should be brought before Congress. They need to testify.
I mean, you know, the more I think of it, though, Bill and Paul, I am furious that they would put this in our drinking water without our permission and approval. I mean, if somebody doesn't want to brush their teeth and take care of themselves, that's their fault, and it's their prerogative. And then for government to put this in for whatever reason, I think it's almost negligent.
You know, there's a court case down in Florida where a gentleman felt exactly the same way as you do, George, and he took it to court. And the ruling was that the water utility only delivers the water to the tap. You're not forced to drink it. You're not forced to drink it. But what they didn't bring up in that court case is the fact that there are millions of people that can't afford not to drink that water. People from low-income families cannot afford bottled water, reverse osmosis, and the other ways that we have of avoiding this stuff, at least for drinking and cooking. Poor people are trapped by this. And what makes this really pernicious is that not only are poor people trapped, but they are more vulnerable to fluoride's toxicity, because we know that fluoride is worse for people with poor nutrition. And the way you're going to find poor nutrition in the United States is families of low income. So you've trapped them,
right,
and you've made it worse for those kids.
And certain races have it worse.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Okay. What's the downside? There's a lot of different issues we're going to talk about tonight in the 3 hours that we've got you here. What is the downside of fluoride? What does it do to us? Well, how does it harm us?
The risks you're talking about. Huge.
Let me give you two things. Right. Sorry, Bill. Do you want to do this?
And you two jump in, Paul, anytime you want.
Go ahead, Paul, and you do two, and I'll do two.
Okay. I'll do two things. Number one, 50% of all the fluoride that you take into your body every day, whether it comes from toothpaste or water, pesticide residues on fruit and so on, 50% is excreted by the kidney, and the rest concentrates in the bones. So steadily over your lifetime, the fluoride in your bones is getting more and more concentrated. The first symptoms of fluoride poisoning are identical to arthritis. We have 68 million Americans with arthritis.
Oh.
No one's seeing if that's caused or whether fluoride is contributing to that. And the second thing with the bones is it makes the bones more brittle. Over a lifetime, we could be seeing an increase in hip fractures in the elderly. That's one thing. The second one is we have now 23 studies which shows that fluoride lowers IQ in children. Not water fluoridation, but in endemic areas for fluorosis. In China and India, they have found that at not very high exposures, I mean as low as 1.8 parts per million of fluoride in the water, lowered IQ in children. 23 studies now we have on this from China, from India, from Iran, and from Mexico. And so, I mean, ask yourself, George, I mean, let's do a risk-benefit analysis. We might reduce tooth decay by a very small fraction. It's not very convincing. There's no difference in tooth decay in between fluoridated, non-fluoridated countries, between fluoridated states, non-fluoridated states, the United States, and so on and so on and so on. But for a minuscule, so let's give them a minuscule saving of tooth decay, and you're going to risk your child's mental development? I mean, this is utterly absurd.